two survivors of the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Parkland, Florida. The activist father of a young victim at Sandy Hook. All dead. All suspected or confirmed suicides within the span of 1 week. Frightening statistics are one thing, and there's plenty of them. But this kind of concentrated tragedy is another. Addressing mental health and self-destructive impulses in a faith context is the Reverend Violet Jonaker. And I am really grateful to have her with us today on State of Belief Radio. Violet, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me and for addressing this important topic.
What were your first thoughts when you heard about this tragic series of suicides connected to past mass shootings?
Oh, gosh, like so many folks, my heart was breaking, both for those who were so severely affected by this tragedy that this was the course of action that was taken, and of course for their families, for their larger communities. I believe that this kind of situation breaks God's heart just as it breaks our hearts.
I think we need to include in our conversation the epidemic of military personnel and veterans killing themselves at the rate of 20 a day as we look at what's happening. Is it helpful to look at the patterns and statistics, or is that potentially distracting from looking at the central problems?
Well, I think we can do both at the same time, and certainly policy analysts would look at the patterns and at the statistics and say, what is behind this? What are we as a culture doing that is preventing folks from getting the resources that they so desperately need? And certainly you're right to point out military deaths as a really significant and tragic phenomenon that's going on right now. So much of that has to do with stigma that is perpetuated by so many in our culture about mental health care access being something that only certain people need or only certain people would seek. And we know that all of that is a myth. I like to say that severe depression, like any physical illness, can be fatal if left untreated. We know that people who don't receive mental health care treatment are at a much higher risk of death by suicide. Mm-hmm. And so we have the data to understand what happens. We know that treatment can be effective just like any physical illness. Mental health issues, if treated, are manageable. People can be living well with any mental health issue. And so we want to make sure that we're doing all we can, particularly as leaders in the faith community, to connect people with proven resources and to make sure they know what help is available to them.
Violet, several years ago, almost two decades ago now, I wrote a book on this whole issue, but I focused mainly on the clergy, because that's where I was when I was going through all of this. I'm curious because of that. I'm curious about what brought you to be so attracted to this particular issue and to write with such wisdom as you do.
Like many clergy, I was in several circumstances where I was meeting folks who had experienced some mental health condition or some form of mental illness, and I heard over and over again, particularly from young people, that their churches were not helpful to them in this process. I met some amazing young women who were excluded from church leadership roles because they were honest about anxiety and depression that they were dealing with, and I just heard some truly terrifying stories about faith leaders from across the country whose advice was really harmful, whose advice was as basic as, well, just pray that away. Certainly you don't need a doctor. We're going to remove you from leadership. We're going to exclude you from community. People who were basically asked to take steps back from the very needed community that they had in church. And of course, all of us have been touched by this at some level, whether people are candid about it or not. We all have folks in our families who've experienced some type of mental health condition. And so for me, the more that I started learning about this subject, the more harm I realized was being caused by faith communities. And so I just started to learn about all of the resources that were out there, all of the really excellent organizations doing this work so well, all of the faith communities leading really courageously and not being afraid to talk about mental health and mental illness, and to preach on it, to pray about it, to teach people about resources in their communities, to advocate for therapy, to advocate for a really holistic treatment. And so the more that I've learned about it, the more I've been inspired by folks doing this well. And my hope is that the more we talk about it, the more that folks like you bring attention to this issue, and the more that clergy of all religious traditions raise this topic in our prayers and in our preaching, the more we'll be able to really have an impact and let people know that faith communities are a place where you can talk about mental health, just like they should be a place where we can talk about anything else we're experiencing.
Is there a way that you can summarize this problem of taking one's own life as you see it? What's missing in so many lives today?
Well, I think so many people who come to the point of experiencing suicide ideation truly do not have access or are not aware of the excellent resources that are out there, such as therapy, psychiatry, psychology, any kind of mental health support. So I would be hesitant to label it as simplistically as some type of emotional connection or something that we might see used in a magazine article or something like that. So I think it really is just this comprehensive access to care that is what's missing. And I think there's a role for all people, and especially people in the faith community, to play in advocating for increased funding for mental health care resources for all people.
Where is our society in general, and organized religion specifically, failing people who are hurting and hopeless?
Yeah, I think we're too afraid to talk about it most of the time. There's so much stigma out there for folks who are experiencing this or whose family members are experiencing this, that shame becomes this overpowering force, preventing us from naming what we're going through and preventing us from being effective advocates for what we know works. We know that there is treatment out there that can help folks, but when we're too scared to speak up about it, when we're too embarrassed to say that we or our loved ones are feeling this way, then we get in our own way, and we prevent ourselves from being really effective at this work of supporting one another. If we're letting stigma take the reins instead of just being willing to be vulnerable with one another and say what we're going through.
There is so much pain. We see this expressed in the opioid epidemic in this country because as many people as are treating physical pain with drugs, there are as many trying to reduce emotional pain. What are some ways this can be mitigated?
Absolutely. Part of it is just having the courage to say out loud what we're going through. And I think that's something that faith communities are uniquely gifted at. We are people of testimony. We are people who tell stories. We are people who seek to create space for those who are vulnerable in our communities to say how they're doing, what they're feeling, what is difficult for them. And so it seems to me to be a natural and obvious place where people should feel encouraged to talk about their mental health. But we tend to be, many churches and faith communities tend to be really dismissive and say unhelpful things like too blessed to be stressed or any other number of quippy and rhymy quick phrases that don't get at the heart of what's really going on. Please don't hear me saying that I don't think that's important. Of course, I believe in the power of God's blessings, and I deeply believe in the power of prayer. But I'm a person that believes in prayer and
yes.
mental health care, prayer
yes.
and group therapy, prayer and psychiatry. I think God has gifted people with the ability to learn more and more about the wonderful creation that is God's brain. And I think medical health care and mental health care are wonderful blessings that we should be encouraging our congregations to take advantage of.
Do you see the kind of rhetoric that politicians are using around these issues as being at all helpful?
Well, one thing in language that you've done so well that I want to commend you for that the news doesn't always get right is just language when we talk about people who have died by suicide. There's an unfortunate phrase out there still getting used where people erroneously say committed suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And mental health advocates in the field are trying to get away from that language because it has ties to conceptualities of criminality.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we want to do is help folks understand that severe depression or whatever has led to suicide ideation is not a criminal act, but is an act of something completely different than that, of something related to health, of something mm-hmm. related to mental health in particular. And so I think it's really important that politicians and the media understand this language about someone whose cause of death was suicide, someone mm-hmm. who died by suicide. I think it is significant that the media is talking more about gun policy as related to suicide. We know that the majority of gun deaths actually are by suicide rather than by any other type, and that men tend to use guns more often and thus complete suicide more frequently because the means are so lethal. And so there are certainly many policy things that we can be talking about related to gun control, related to access to all these other things. But what I'm disappointed that I don't hear more of in the public debate around this, particularly with politicians, is to just be very clear about the need to fully fund access to mental health care.
Mm-hmm.
We know what works. Again, yeah. This is not rocket science that we have to figure out how to do this. We know that preventative care and treatment really do make a significant difference.
Mm-hmm.
And if our country were willing to stand up and make the moral argument that we have to fully fund mental health care for all people, we would see suicide numbers declining.
So what are the missing parts of the conversation? What do people need to hear to understand precisely what we're facing as a society?
One of the missing parts of the conversation in faith communities specifically is that, unfortunately, it is unlikely that most people will hear mental health preached about or prayed about mm-hmm. in their services. This is something that, at least in the United Methodist Church, which I'm part of, our bishops have really been encouraging us to talk more about, to pray more about, to preach more about, so that people know this is a place where they can share what's going on with them. Studies have shown that people experiencing any form of mental illness are most likely to go to their clergy person first before they would go to a therapist or a hospital. And so it's essential that clergy receive the training or educate themselves about resources that are available in their community to match people with good therapists. I am trained in ministry, and mm-hmm. I am trained in some counseling, but I am not a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a psychiatrist. I know my limits. And so when I encounter a situation with someone who needs more professional help than I'm able to give, I am more than happy to make a referral to someone who I have done the work to already meet with and say, hey, here's a therapist in town who I really trust. So that's the important language for people living with mental illness. The important language for people who are not living with mental illness is to understand that they have a role to play in advocating for a better mental health care system.
Mm-hmm.
For us to just kind of, you know, sit silently and say, gosh, I wish the system were different, or for us to share the articles on Facebook and say, oh, another tragedy, I'm so sad.
Mm-hmm.
That is significant that we're contributing to the conversation and saying we're not afraid to talk about it, but until we transfer that energy into real policy advocacy work and are writing our elected officials and saying, I need you to make mental health care funding a central point of your campaign, then I think that would be when we would start to see some difference.
Hmm. Violet, talk about your vision for how healing can begin at the individual and at the collective levels, if you would.
Sure. I think healing is a journey, so it's certainly not going to be something that happens in a moment in a church service or anything like that. It's about intentional invitation into community for long periods of time. Oftentimes, folks who are living with severe mental illness, even if it's being treated, that process can be difficult, and there can be challenges, and folks might not understand how to be supportive. There's a Christian author who writes about this subject of mental health care in churches, and she calls mental illness the no casserole illness. Huh. Her name is Amy Simpson, and she says that lots of times churches that are so great at hospitality and affirmation of people who break a bone or get cancer or some other tragic illness, that when we have folks in our congregations living with mental illness, we just forget what to do. We forget that we're really good at showing up with casseroles. We forget that we're really good at giving people rides to doctor's appointments. Mm-hmm. We forget that we're really good at sending cards and doing some of these other supportive things. So a big part of this work is being willing to be in it for the long haul, to say, I'm going to support you and your family through this journey and stand with you even when times are difficult. And for me, that I've seen that continual support, that commitment to affirming people as part of the church family, to be just an incredibly healing thing. Studies have shown that people who are part of faith communities over time have lower incidences of severe mental illness. And please don't hear me saying that simply joining a church cures a mental illness. That's not my point. But to be part of a community and people who are supporting you can have a tremendous impact on your mental health.
For people who are listening who may be struggling, what kind of resources do you recommend for them?
Absolutely. Well, I'll be very clear. I'm always sharing the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number, which you can call anytime, 24 hours a day. That number is 1-800-273-8255. If you're not feeling up to making a phone call, there's also a crisis text line. You can go to crisistextline.org, or you can text the word HOME to 741-741. And those folks will be able to respond to you and talk you through an immediate crisis. But these are also resources you can call if a loved one is in immediate crisis. And lastly, I also always give out the information for the Trevor Project, which specifically works with LGBTQ youth in crisis. That's thetrevorproject.org. They have a phone line you can call and places you can chat online. So I want folks to know that if you're in immediate crisis, there are people out there who are ready to be there with you, ready to support you. And my message to folks always is that we need you in this world. We need you here. There is something that you are uniquely gifted to do, something that God has prepared you uniquely for. And we cannot achieve God's kingdom and all of God's vision for this world until you have lived out your full purpose too. So we need you here in this world, and we hope that you'll stay.
The Reverend Violet Joniker is pastor of Brook Road United Methodist Church in Rockford, Illinois. She holds a Master of Public Policy and Community Health degree. Reverend Joniker, I can't tell you how grateful I am for you being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you so much for your attention to this issue, and my prayer is that more people will be as vocal as you have been today so that all people might know that there should be no shame or no stigma for living with mental health issues.